the release of the Freddie Mercury biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. Lambert himself makes a cameo in the film as a trucker who Freddie eyes going into a bathroom. That's the latest from Radio News.
Mike Ashley has called for an internet.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. And after that update about all the things that are going on in the entertainment world, we're delighted that that you're joining us for another Kent Biz Connect. Kent Biz Connect is the bi-weekly radio show with all the latest business news and opportunities to connect businesses in Kent. With myself, Martin White, my co-host, Brian Wakefield. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Martin.
And our studio guest today, Alan McCappin from Bradley's Accountants. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Martin. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, nice to see you. It's I saw you on Friday, I think, didn't I? Over in
just briefly passing
in Ramsgate, yes, for an afternoon's networking. So that was great fun. So good afternoon to all our listeners out there. You can contact us if you would like to using our Twitter handle Kent_Biz. So we'd love to hear from you. We are going to be touching on some very topical news items relevant to the Kent business community today. And we're also going to be talking about some of the events that are coming up, I think, just before Christmas. I know Brian's got some news he wants to share with us about BBN networking. We're also going to be talking about some of the grant funding programs that are out there that might be relevant for businesses in Kent as well. But I think what we're going to do, guys, if we can is kick off with the sort of let's get the elephant in the room out of the room, shall we? I don't know if that's the right way of putting it, but I think in the last couple of hours it's just been announced that we aren't actually going to be having a vote tomorrow in Parliament to accept or reject the government's proposed Brexit deal.
Oh, so there you go, he's mentioned it. We went about a minute and a half without mentioning it. I thought we'd got away with it.
So I don't know how everybody out there feels about it, but I mean, what are our kind of views in the studio about what's kind of where we are, what the current state of affairs is with Brexit?
Well, for me, I think that at the end of the day, we just need to make a decision, even if it's a bad one. We need to make a decision so that people can then prepare for it.
Yeah.
So because the problem is people may have contingency plans, but they don't know when they're going to enact them because they haven't got an idea of when any of these deadlines are actually going to occur because nothing's been done. And once something has been done, then people can start preparing for the worst or for the best.
Yeah.
But until that happens, you just don't know where you are, which is creating uncertainty in the market.
Yeah.
And then people then are holding back on money because they don't know how much they're going to need to cover for any contingencies that they might have.
Mm. Yeah, what Alan said, really. To be perfectly honest, I'm totally fed up the whole thing, and it hasn't even happened yet. And I'm absolutely bored and fed up with Brexit and all the shenanigans, the money that's being wasted on talking about this and doing that and meetings. Personally, on my limited knowledge of it, and that's by choice, I have to say, is that I think we're heading for a second referendum. I can't really see any way around it, to be honest. But as Alan said, you know, the kind of knock-on effect with it all, I mean, I've just seen in the last 15 minutes that the pound has just hit an 18-month low today.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that. It's
and it has to be affecting
good.
Business, surely, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know where
it's the uncertainty, isn't
well,
it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know certainly the shops where I live, and talking to shop owners locally, everybody's saying how much quieter it is. So, I mean, obviously, we don't report, you know, the kind of the trading figures in terms of GDP until 3 months after the event. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if, you know, we're currently in what should be quite a buoyant trading period, you know, possibly looking at a kind of a negative growth in the economy this quarter.
A lot of businesses, this makes their year. It's make or break.
Yeah.
It's December figures, especially in the retail industry. And, God knows what it's going to look like in January if December carries on like it is for a lot of these people.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a lack of confidence, you know, with people in terms of, you know, wage packets and prices and everything else, then, you know, people surely they're not going to be going out spending in the same way that they might otherwise do, surely. It's just
they're
common sense, isn't it?
They're just holding
exactly,
on to it.
Exactly, holding on to it.
Under the mattress, and that's where it's staying.
I mean, we haven't noticed it yet with clients, but then, again, it all comes down to As you're saying, this is the make or break month, so it could be that afterwards some of, but we don't have many retail clients. Majority of ours are like in trades. Usually it's trades where we notice it's like this early warning sign for us. But I mean, I've had a lot of your clients that have actually expanded where they've gone above the VAT threshold, and that's been more recently. So it will be interesting to see, obviously, the next year, whether things will start to drop out or what.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, as a kind of a 12-month period, I think generally the economy has stood up pretty well to all this uncertainty around Brexit.
It has.
But things are kind of taking on a whole new level now, aren't they, with, you know, the discussion in Parliament. I mean, Theresa May having to postpone the vote in Parliament because clearly she doesn't think she can win that vote. Yeah. So if she doesn't win that vote, you know, where do we go from there? Well, it's, you know...
Where do we go from there? That's the thing. They're talking about a general election, a second referendum. Yeah. I mean, this is all disastrous, darling.
It is, really. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's just, it's total nonsense. But you can understand the kind of dichotomy that we're in, can't you? Because, you know, on the ballot paper for the referendum, I can't even remember when that was, 2 years ago or something, we all went to the vote. I think it said, are you voting to remain in the EU? Or are you voting to come out of the EU? There was no small print attached to any of that.
And that's the key.
It is the key, really. So, you know, the people that voted to come out are expecting us to be out. What we've actually ended up with, by the sounds of it, is a sort of a, we're out, but we're still in. Yeah. You know, and which is a phrase that I coined, you know, many months ago, Brinzit.
Yeah.
You know, we are out, but we're not. Yeah. You know, we're in. Mm. And of course, that just isn't acceptable to a lot of MPs who are campaigning for us to come out of the EU. And now, you know, effectively, we're ending up potentially with a sort of a halfway house solution.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's before you even get into the whole discussion about Northern Ireland being treated separately to the, as a kind of almost an independent
state, backstop,
you know, to the rest of the UK. So we really have, however it's happened, we've got ourselves in a terrible muddle here.
Mm.
But from a business perspective, it's not a good thing. You know, and we will see that reflected, I'm sure, in the GDP numbers in the new year. I can't imagine that. I mean, Germany, I believe, in the last quarter was, if they didn't have negative growth, they were certainly didn't have, you know, they had zero growth.
The smallest for some time.
Yeah. Mm. And I'm sure a lot of that is down to the fact that, you know, British consumers aren't ordering as many cars, for example.
Pretty much totally.
So it's not just us that's going to be affected. And that's, you know, it's a worrying time. It's unprecedented, really. I mean, I can't remember a situation like this before. I mean, we've had a banking crisis, you know, that sparked off the last recession. But this one seems to be... totally self-inflicted in many ways.
Yeah, it does. And also, I think the other things come, it's all very cyclical, isn't it? And you go into some kind of downturn every 10 or 15 years or whatever it is, and then it always recovers and everything's generally better than what it was before the last one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be the prophet of doom or Mr. Negative or anything, but something just feels a little bit different to me with this.
I agree.
It's far more reaching.
The problem as well is the original Brexit campaigners are now sort of quickly they've got what they wanted, which is the vote, and then they quickly left. And then now they've left it with people that weren't pro-Brexit.
Yes.
So you've got people that are trying to put in something in place, which... all they know is that they really kind of want the EU to be involved anyway.
Yeah.
And then so they're effectively going for some mediocre agreement
because
they don't truly believe in Brexit themselves. Mm. So, I mean, that's the problem, is that you've got someone that's not really Brexit orientated trying to develop a plan, and then all she really knows is something that's like EU-based.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. So... and then, of course, you've got all the, everybody else around the kind of periphery all kind of closing in because they're seeing it as an opportunity to, you know, to make gains. And, you know, that on a kind of political level is obviously fundamentally wrong because it doesn't necessarily have our interests at heart, you know, and they are an elected body there to serve the interests of the, you know, of the kind of the... you know, the people of the United Kingdom. So
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting that I think politicians in many ways are going to have to catch up with the mentality of a lot of proactive British businessmen. And what we like in networking, we talk a lot about joint ventures, collaboration, working together. It's not competition, let's work together. Well, never has that been truer in politics now, is that it's not a party thing. I think they really need to put all that aside and say, look, we could be in deep crap here, chaps, so we need to be stronger together, fight together, work together and get out of it. And unless they do, then it's going to be a bit bumpy.
Yeah, to be honest, we should look at maybe some sort of consortium, really.
Yes,
to negotiate, really, on behalf of businesses. Mm. And so that way we get both sides of it. But the
exactly right.
Obviously, like the PM and also businesses can sort of join together and come up with something that's mutually beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah,
I even heard on the news, I think yesterday, or no, it was an interview on the Andrew Marr show yesterday morning, talking about how in theory Parliament might be sitting on Christmas Day.
Yes,
because you know there are finite timeframes around which all of this now has to be sorted out, and you know that really would be unprecedented, wouldn't it? You know,
yeah. Oh, the clock is
turning.
And how many of us would feel obliged to tune into the news, you know, to find out what was going on? So yeah, it's very uncertain times, very unprecedented, and you know, let's hope we kind of come out at the end of it with something that unites us as a country,
to happen,
and that we can move forward with, because you know, we certainly don't want to see the likes of what we're seeing in France at the moment, do we, in terms of that social fabric breaking
kicked
down.
Off a bit lively, isn't it, over there? Exactly.
Right, I think we should move on to something a bit more positive.
Yes.
Because there's no right or wrong answer to any of that, let's face it, and there's very little light at the end of the tunnel at the moment as well. So Brian, tell if we got anything exciting happening this week that our listeners should be aware of.
Yeah, I think so, Martin. Obviously we are into the month of Christmas, the festive month, so there's all manner of do's going on, and like yourself, Whitey, you know, everyone's going to get invited out to partake in a glass or 12 of something. But yeah, there's some good business-related events. One that's caught my eye is SNS Solicitors, our friends in Maidstone.
That's Gareth and John and Danielle.
Exactly,
and
right.
Richard, and there's another lady there as well now, whose name escapes me. But
oh, there's feels like hundreds of them there, but it's a decent firm of solicitors, they're having a mince pies and mulled wine networking event, which is this Friday, the 14th of December. So that takes place from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock, but I have a feeling that there might be a hardcore kind of
for you local people,
for us local Maidstonites, it may well kind of disappear into town for a quick shandy afterwards and stuff like that.
Well, but I know John likes his sherry, so I'm sure John Newcombe will definitely be up.
Oh, well, there you are. So yes, that's that's three till five this Friday, the 14th, at SNS Solicitors in Denning House on London Road in Maidstone.
Superb, fantastic. I'm going to talk a little bit, if I can, about some business funding that may be of interest to our listeners out there today. So a lot of people, whenever I talk about a grant funding initiative called Southeast Business Boost, a lot of people have a sort of blank expression on their face because they just simply haven't heard about
it. Me included.
This may even be relevant for you, Brian. So, and funnily enough, this also has a slight European slant to it, because we're talking about European Regional Development Fund money here. £2.5 million, to be precise, that's been allocated for businesses in Essex and Kent and East Sussex to help them grow. And in November alone, a total of £52,000 worth of grant applications were actually approved through Southeast Business Boost. And I'll read you out some of the examples so that, you know, you can get a feel for whether or not it might be relevant for your business. So we had a brewery in Dover called Breakwater, who received grant approval for £10,000 for a new canning line for their business, which is really exciting for them. So they're taking their brew and they're going to be retailing it moving forward. So that's really exciting. We had a photographic company that received grant approval for just under £7,000 for photographic equipment. We've had website development grant approvals, marketing consultancy, a new truck for a business in Maidstone, funnily enough, called Weavering Developments. So they're a sort of residential development company, and they were expanding and they needed a new truck for their business. So really, it's a blank piece of paper when it comes to thinking about your business and crucially your business investment going into next year. You know, what am I likely to be spending money on to help me grow my business? Is it a new website? Is it new website functionality that I need? It might be an e-commerce platform that you want to bolt onto an existing website, for example. So the maximum grant at the moment is £10,000. The minimum grant is £1,000, and it's based on a 30% grant contribution. So in order to get the maximum, in other words, you need to be spending, Alan, you'll know this better than me, but you'll need to be spending £33,333 to then get a £10,000 grant contribution towards that investment. To get the minimum of £1,000, obviously you need to be spending £3,233. But it doesn't have to be on a single item either. The key thing really is to think about everything on a kind of holistic level that you might be doing next year. How does that all kind of join up, and what does that total expenditure look like? And then you can obviously work all of that into your grant. Whether you ultimately proceed with that investment or not is obviously down to you. The point is, if you don't apply and register your interest, then clearly you won't get the money ultimately. So that's the key thing.
So how do Kent businesses get their hands on the spondulics?
That's a really good question. I mean, it's quite a straightforward process. It's nothing like the £35 million worth of regional development fund money that some people may be aware of that came into our county a few years back, which was all administered by a large firm up in London. Ultimately, there is an initial business qualification questionnaire. Is your business eligible? And that really is a tick box exercise in terms of, making sure that you're not your business isn't trading in one of the excluded categories, for example, and it's fairly obvious which ones we're talking about here. That will then basically get you on the books in terms of an eligible business, and from there it's really down to you to decide the pace at which your application proceeds. But there is obviously a full application on the back of that that identifies what you specifically want to spend the money on. And again, this is initially pre-qualified to make sure that you don't get the final application wrong, as it were. So there's sort of like a business qualification questionnaire, then there's a project qualification questionnaire, and then subject to that being given the green light, there's a full application which is then submitted. So you can't go wrong, really, in the process is designed to help you succeed rather than help you fail.
Is there a deadline for this funding?
Not at the moment. I mean, again, that's a really good question. So it's been running for a year. The intention is to run it for the whole of 2019 as well. But it's very much dependent upon the uptake of applications. So the number of applications, crucially, and also, the average value of the successful applications that are going through. And depending on what that looks like, obviously the program may be it may be adapted slightly moving forward. So I think the average grant application approval that's being assumed is £5,000. If that ends up being higher than that, then obviously it may affect the criteria for the grant moving forward. So my advice would be to get your business eligibility questionnaire in now so that you're on the system. I know there's another program, for example, called Locase, which I believe is no longer open for that very reason. No longer open to new applications, because they have enough applications in the pipeline you know, to effectively see the grant program through to its completion. So get your business eligibility questionnaire in now, I would suggest, so that you're registered and you're on the system, so that you'll get first bite of the cherry. That's the key thing.
Mm-hmm. You need it to win it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, at the end of the day, it is free money, and it is money that's sitting there waiting for your business to apply for it. So you really have got nothing to lose. Yeah. You've got everything to gain here.
Would it be tax-free, Alan? You wouldn't have to pay tax on it, would you?
In a way, it is. But what the issue is that with grant money, it reduces the cost of the item you're buying. So
right.
In some senses, you're being taxed for
so
it.
So what you can claim would be less.
You're getting taxed because your costs have been reduced. So ultimately, you wouldn't have that tax relief for the full item.
Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
If you're buying a truck, say, and it comes with like 20, and you got $3,000 off that, so yeah. Then you're only going to get tax relief on the 17.
On the 17, yeah.
So. That's a good point. You can find out more information about Southeast Business Boost, in the community section on Supply My Business. So we're actually working with KCC now at Supply My Business to help them market this this grant funding initiative and really get the kind of get the message out there that it is available. So you'll find probably two or three posts in the community section with a link to the business qualification questionnaire in there as well. So good luck with that, everybody. And, you know, as I say, if you are spending money, you know, it could be a useful contribution to that investment. Brian, have you got anything else that you'd like to tell us about?
A couple of other little snippets going on here, Martin. Our friend Joe Humphrey down at Oregon Computer Training.
Hello, Joe.
And welcome, Joe. Saying that as if she's here, but she isn't. But what she has got going on is she's got a PowerPoint introductory course on the 22nd of January. Basically, it is what it says. It's introductory, included refreshments at their brand new offices at Conqueror Court in Sittingbourne. So you can email info@oregontraining.com to book on, or just give them a call on 01892 665353.
Brilliant, thanks for that. We are fast approaching the halfway point of our show already, which is unbelievable,
time
isn't
flies.
It so what we're going to do now is we're going to play a little bit of tunage and we're going to
discover the link.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to ask you to make the link yourselves in terms of why you think it might be relevant. So here we go.
1, 2, 3, 4
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah. Too small.
I hope the attentive listeners out there have managed to work out why we've played that particular song.
And which song was it, Martin?
From the Beatles. Well, that was a song called Taxman.
The Taxman. And what's the relevance? What's the link?
Well, funnily enough, as I was sort of typing into a well-known global search engine earlier on, relevant songs that I thought we might be able to use today. All the songs that came up were from these enormous sort of rock bands from the late 60s, early 70s, that were clearly getting hammered to death by the Taxman. And I think, Alan, let me bring you in. Alan McCappin has joined us from Bradley's Accountants. Welcome to the studio. It's great to have you with us, but I believe back then, was the tax rate something like, I mean, it was about
98%.
Was it 98p in the pound? Was it as high as that? So, quite
before I was born. Yeah.
Quite scary.
Ask Rod Stewart and Elton John, they'll know.
Yeah, quite scary. So, Alan, welcome to Kent Biz Connect. Obviously, it's an incredibly busy time for accountants. Yes. A lot of people have their year end at the end of December, I guess. Effectively, explain to me how that works, because we were having this discussion the other day, weren't we?
What we found actually, it's not actually necessary. It's the people that have the year ends in December. It's actually the ones that have.
Yes.
For instance, year ends in March.
That's it.
They're due 9 months after the year end. So what you'll find is a lot of people will bring it in. Funnily enough, it's one of those things where people end up dumping it into you before the Christmas breaks and everything. And then, but you also have that for the January self-assessments as well. It becomes that a lot of people do bring in their work to us in November, December time.
Yeah.
And so in some cases, even January as well. I mean, that's why a little bit later I want to talk about Making Tax Digital, because ultimately that might even affect when people start bringing things in the future.
Yes. Okay. So let's sort of backtrack. Thank you for putting me straight on that. I always get that muddled up. So the end of my financial year is the end of March, and then I have 9 months to submit my accounts ultimately. Yeah. So that's exactly what the process that I've just been through. Let's backtrack a little bit. Tell us about Bradley's and how long you've been at the helm of Bradley's and where you are and what your kind of specialist skill set is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. Originally, I was born and bred in Essex, believe it or not. So,
I'm sorry to hear that, Alan.
Commiserations.
Can't be helped.
And I worked for a firm there. And I think it was about April 2013, I moved across to Kent. And it was kind of what brought me across was that I'd met someone as well from Kent,
Your
fair county.
Right.
And so I needed to look for work, obviously, in Kent to make it viable relationship to some extent.
So even accountants.
Essex and Kent could be quite difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Even accountants have lives outside of work.
I know. Yeah. That's happened.
Yes. Okay. Accountants have girlfriends too.
Right. Okay.
It's not a myth.
I didn't know that. Thanks.
And then so I came on board in April 2013, working for Bradley's Accountants. We're based in Welling High Street, so we've actually got a shop front. So it in a lot of cases, it is kind of no appointments necessary. You get a lot of people that walk in.
Right.
So that makes us slightly different to a lot of other accountants. A lot of them will only do appointment only. In fact, there's another accountancy practice a bit further down the road from us, and they've actually closed their shop front, and they will only turn up for meetings.
Yeah.
Ah.
So people
didn't actually want anyone coming to see them.
Yeah. So customers will literally walk in. Yeah. How does that? I mean, have they got a bag of stuff with them that they need you to sort out there and then, or how does that work?
Sometimes you do get that. Generally, it's people will be shopping in the Welling High Street, or they might be in the vicinity for some reason, and they go, "Oh, I saw your shop front. I was just wondering, because something's been playing on their mind."
Right.
So usually it's like, "Oh, they've had a few sleepless nights recently,"
yes,
and then they're like, "Oh, I just need your help because, like, I they might not have declared property lets, and they've heard a lot about it on the news.
Oh, right.
And they're a little bit worried, well, how far can they go back? And what have I got to do to make sure that I comply?
Yeah. So having a high street operation is totally relevant for your business, isn't it, in that respect?
Yeah.
It's not just all about referral and networking, and obviously you do that as well, but actually having a physical presence in the form of a shop, for want of a better word, is...
I think we get a lot of trades as well as a result of that, because a lot of tradesmen usually working in the area on other people's shop fronts, and then they think, oh, I must sort this out.
Right.
And the thing is that they don't have the time to then wait for till they finish work to go and see an accountant. So they go on their lunch break or something along that to come and see us, and that's how we signed them up.
So what do you hang your hat on? What's your kind of, you know, what is it that you want to be doing for clients? You know, where do you think you can add most value in terms of, you know, working with a small business, for example?
To be honest, one thing is that we do establish ourselves is with business itself in general. So we do have, like, whilst we have a lot of individual clients, most of our focus is on businesses, and we've got a strong knowledge base when it comes to construction clients.
Right.
We've got a lot of construction clients. A lot of that came from when I was in Essex, we had about a 95% construction base.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came across to Kent, our client base in terms of construction was very low. I think it was probably about 5%. But now I would go as far as saying it's probably almost like 50% of our client base is construction.
So they have particular needs in terms of tax, for example. Like I said, there's been quite a few changes, haven't there, in legislation, I think, regarding, is it contractors and people who are self-employed or...
The whole IR35.
IR35, yes.
How long you can keep those subcontractors on for as a contractor.
So it's quite a minefield, really. So that's really where your expertise comes in, is sort of unpicking the legislation and making sure that it works for you as an individual.
And then there's also special VAT aspects which come into construction. For instance, you've got new builds, they're zero-rated. They're conversions from, commercial to, like, residential.
Okay, that's good to know.
Okay, good.
So just remind us, how long have you been at the helm now?
Well, I joined in April 2013 and I took over in 2007.
So. Oh, right. So you've been there a while.
Yeah.
Doesn't look old enough, does he, Brian?
No, he doesn't.
Okay. And what are your sort of ambitions for Bradley's moving forwards? Because obviously now it's very much under your supervision kind of day to day as the principal.
What I'd love to do is probably get it eventually to a stage where we have a second shop.
Right.
Probably somewhere closer to where I live. But I would like to eventually expand.
Yeah.
And because I think with every area, I think you gradually get to a point where you can only grow so far.
Yeah.
And I think that I need to look at possibly another area at some point.
Yes. Okay. Fine. Yeah. And I mean, I guess it wouldn't be a bad thing to sort of to have that new office in an area of kind of development, for example. And I mean, Ashford is sort of booming at the moment, isn't it, in terms of the development work that's going on here. I mean, with all the motorway junctions,
there's certainly development work going on. Yeah,
MacArthur Glen
coming and, here today.
Yeah. So
speak motorways.
We're going to move the conversation on there if we can, and just to talk about a little bit about Making Tax Digital, because I know there's still an awful lot of people out there that have done very little about making their tax affairs digital going into next year. And I believe MTD, as it's affectionately known, hashtag MTD, is going to apply to any business that's kind of VAT registered from April next year onwards. So what does that actually mean to a business that is currently VAT registered, but perhaps not completing their They're VAT return digitally online.
And is it? Is that exactly what it means? Because I know we had a discussion before we came on air, and there are lots of questions. And I think you said that a lot of people have done nothing. Well, I still believe a lot of people believe it doesn't apply to them for various reasons. So can you sort of throw any sense on that, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is that, yeah, if you're a VAT registered business, obviously, this will apply to you, but if you're not VAT registered, then you don't have to worry about this.
It's business as usual.
Business
as usual for now. But
so there's a VAT registration threshold. Let's get that out into the open.
Which is 85,000. Yeah. It usually goes up 2,000 every year.
Yeah. Right.
They did a year freeze this year.
Okay. So if your turnover is below £85,000, you don't have to be VAT registered by law.
No, that's correct. Okay. You don't have to be. So if you're not, then do those people just continue to get their accountant or those that do it themselves to file their tax returns by the 31st of January online?
Yes, because effectively it was still in terms of the income tax and the corporation tax system, that's still the same. The only people that are affected are people that are VAT registered, because it will affect how they file their VAT.
Which is okay, all right.
So the account, in terms of the income tax and corporation tax side of things, they're looking to phase that in 2020. So I think what they're first doing is they're trialling it with people that are used to filing something quarterly.
Yeah.
So they're going to gradually phase in the income tax and the corporation tax aspect once they've got a lot of the businesses through on the quarterly aspect and people used to it. And also it helped them sort of find out any niggles, as it were. But I mean,
is this for our benefit, Alan, or is this for HMRC's benefit? I mean, who's gonna benefit from all of this extra?
I think I'll know the answer to that.
Actually, be surprised. I mean, in one instance, HMRC will massively benefit from this, and the reason why they'll benefit from it is that you're not submitting just summary figures; you're submitting transactional data,
right?
Which then that means is that they can use that data to then filter through and look for unusual items, as it were, for your type of industry. And so then that will help them pick out discrepancies so they can target their inquiries a little bit more easily. And I think what you'll find as well is that they'll almost have their answer on the inquiry before they've even approached you.
Yes.
And then so...
And I guess what they'll be able to do ultimately as well, because I know VAT fraud has continues to be a massive headache for HMRC. Somebody that starts a business, charges VAT, for example, and never actually pays a VAT bill.
Does that kind of stuff still go on?
Oh, all the time, I'm sure.
Good Lord.
So I guess they'll be able to kind of join the dots up, won't they, and say, right, if you've sold goods to business X and charged them VAT, you know, they know who business X is. They know who you are because you've, you know, in theory, you've kind of filed a return. And if you haven't actually paid your bill, then obviously they're going to be knocking on the door, aren't they?
You actually do raise a good point, actually, because I suppose they'll be able to collect supplier data, and then from the supplier data, they can look at the aggregate annual aspect and then go, well, actually, this person's above the VAT threshold.
Yeah.
So it's not something I'd originally thought of, but as you mentioned,
the problem tends to be, Brian, where businesses register for VAT, but then they don't actually ever pay any VAT. So that's
outrageous.
That's your classic VAT fraud. Not the people who aren't even registered for VAT, but are charging VAT. I mean, they have to have a VAT number to be able to put that on invoices. Excellent. But what they don't ever do is pay the VAT bill. That's the issue.
Well, how can they do that?
The worst one, actually, is not that. It's where they register for VAT and they later on deregister for VAT.
But continue to charge for
it. VAT certificate.
There you go.
Some have been caught for that.
The chains of businesses that then get caught up in that, you can imagine, you know, if you're going from sort of, wholesaler to wholesaler, you know, to middleman somewhere else. And, you know, you can imagine the number of businesses that get caught up in the chain there, none of whom ultimately... end up getting their money back.
Yeah.
Right, so all that's going to be stopped, basically, because...
It'll be a lot more transparent, won't it, I think.
So if you're VAT registered, you file online figures and stuff quarterly.
Yeah, so you have to use some kind of specialised software.
Mm.
So a lot of the main contenders like Xero and QuickBooks and Sage One.
NatWest's own free one that they provide.
Essentially, all of those should have... I know Xero definitely has because I attended XeroCon. Mm. And at XeroCon, they announced that they are MTD ready.
Mm.
But a lot of the others will be. And because if they're not, then they've lost their customer base. Mm. So a lot of the main ones will be. And you'll have to probably use their software in order to comply.
Mm.
I mean, a lot of people have asked, can you use spreadsheets?
Mm.
You can in a way.
Mm.
But only if you use it in conjunction with some bridging software. And so that software is acting like a middleware to then sit with your spreadsheet and joins up all the numbers to it and submits it to their gateway.
Mm.
And it has to be done in that format, otherwise they will not accept spreadsheets.
Mm. So from your point of view, Alan, because I think this was always, again, one of the things that was always very uncertain about this whole thing was whether or not it ultimately meant that the business owner was going to be paying their accountant more money or not. So from your point of view, how is that changing your remuneration in relationship with your clients?
To be honest, I think that in some ways it will probably be very similar, because what we'll find is that we'll have probably some clients which will decide that they... Well, I mean, we might try and push some of our own clients to try and do their own making tax digital, we'll train them in some cloud-based software.
Right.
I mean, a lot of our clients will already submit it on cloud-based software, so it would be an easy transition for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it will also then pass a little bit of an onus on them to sort of understand their own figures. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of people that... a lot of businesses you speak to, and they don't know what their annual turnover or sales are or what their rough costs are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that sometimes it's useful that people are doing that. Like, I mean, this is why when Xero came in, it revolutionised things for businesses, was that people were then actually, they took the most tedious aspect of bookkeeping, which was reconciling your bank, and made it enjoyable.
Mm.
So... I mean,
so you're encouraging some of your clients where you think, you know, it's possible to actually, you know, take the responsibility themselves, and you can provide the training. And I guess ultimately you are partnered with a software provider. Is it Xero that you work with?
Right. Yeah. So we're actually gold Xero partners.
So you can license the software at a preferential rate anyway. Which helps as well, doesn't it? So, okay.
So at the moment then, those clients of yours that you've just spoken about report quarterly to you via that software.
So essentially what happens is that they will use... Some of them will do their own sales on there. So we've got a mix. Some of them will do everything themselves, and then they'll submit it to us to review their VAT return.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually once they become confident, then they'll just submit their VAT returns. There's other clients which they don't like figures, and essentially they will just give us all of the their paperwork.
So they give you a carrier bag full of receipts and you do it all?
Yeah.
Will you continue to do that?
Yes.
Right.
I think it'll be a question of, we'll sort of ask our clients what they would prefer to do, whether they'd prefer us to continue just doing what we've been doing in the past, or whether they would like some software. So for instance, some of them they just raise their sales invoices, and that's helpful for them because then they know who owes them, because there's been times where when we've come to doing the year ends for clients, and then we go back to them and say, well, has this person paid you? And they said,
they have no credit control, or
so they didn't know. Like, they thought everything had been settled. And they've actually end up having to write off the bad debts because they don't want to lose the client in the future.
The ones that are already reporting to you via the software, in essence, then they'll be reporting straight to HMRC and not to you.
Well, they some of them will be still reporting to us, and then we'll report it to HMRC. So we'll put it in a compliant manner. So it depends on which ones decide that they want to kind of take on the bookkeeping themselves, or if they still want us to do the bookkeeping, but we'll still be involved in the process.
Oh, okay. So just to clarify then, that is for companies that are VAT registered.
Yeah.
If you're below the VAT threshold and you're not VAT registered, you don't have to do that yet, but you will have to from 2020.
2020, they're looking to phase in for corporation tax and income tax. So once that comes in, then you're responsible for filing using NTD compliance.
See, that's going to be horrific, isn't it? Because you're going to get lots of kind of very small one-man bands, maybe semi-retired people that are doing a couple of days a week and perhaps earning, you know, 10, 15,000 a year or something. And now they're expected to do online quarterly reporting.
So will that apply to self-employed people as well, or ultimately, or just limited companies and LLPs? Self-employed.
So, I mean, the problem is that, it's a little bit of compliance, a little bit more compliance than what people are used to. But to be honest, it might make people a little bit more business-focused because getting to know your numbers a little bit more can actually make that difference between your business being successful and it failing.
I totally agree. I mean, that must be one of your biggest frustrations, the fact that, you know, as we've just said, you know, you don't have to file a set of accounts for compliance purposes until 9 months after the end of your financial year. So invariably what happens is a lot of businesses are borrowing from this year's sales to pay last year's tax bill.
So they're always in arrears. You could receive payment in May and your end of your tax year is April. You're not liable to get that in until the following January, so it's almost 2 years afterwards, having no clue what your tax bill's going to be, and all of a sudden you get hit with a tax bill.
Lots of worrying figures for you guys, and that is that 20% of new businesses fail in the first year.
Yeah.
30% of businesses fail in the second year. 50% of businesses fail in 5 years, and 70% of businesses fail in 10 years.
Right. Mm-hmm. So only 30% of businesses make it past 10 years. That's gosh.
It's quite worrying.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm hoping that with the implementation of NTD, it might give people a bit more focus on their business. And
that's good. So you're seeing the positive side rather than the negative HMRC, Big Brother kind of wants to know what's going on. I totally agree with you. I think, you know, businesses that don't have a set of monthly management accounts or some kind of oversight in terms of the key numbers that are driving their business, whether it be an understanding of margin, for example, turnover, overheads, you know, they're missing a trick.
Yeah, true. I mean, a lot of banks now have turned it towards businesses now to provide business plans.
Yes,
they won't open bank accounts sometimes without a business plan.
Yeah.
To show at least then people are thinking about their business before they start it. And I think that's probably a lot of people fail because they've done lack of research in their market or they haven't really thought how they're actually going to develop their idea.
About
the costs, for instance,
Cash flow, is always, cash is king, you know, but do people really understand that? And I guess until you've actually, you've been or owned a business that's been in a negative cash flow position, i.e., you know, you've got bills to pay and you can't pay them because you haven't been paid for whatever reason, you don't necessarily understand what that means.
A lot of business owners find it difficult to understand the difference between profit and cash. And the thing is that they see that they've got, say, like, I don't know, 50K profit, and they're like, why don't I have that in my bank?
Yeah, because I've been paid for it for a start.
And a lot of it is down to that as well.
Yeah. So, Alan, in terms of the services that you offer to your client. So let's take the sort of semi-retired 60-year-old guy that's running a very small business, more of a lifestyle business that doesn't make a lot of money, and he kind of doesn't really want to make that transition, can't really see the point. Would you still offer the service where if he still does want to give you manual books or a carrier bag full of receipts and stuff, would that be it for him? Would you offer the service where you'll say, don't worry, we'll do all your digital requirements?
And I mean, it's not even age specific. What you find is that there's a lot of trades as well that don't enjoy the numbers aspect.
I agree.
And would actually prefer us to deal with it. So, yes, we'd still offer that service, and we're not going to look take away, but I would like to kind of promote to our clients as well that it's something that they should maybe think about taking on board themselves so they can understand their business more and ensure that...
That's good to know, though, because I think it's all about choices. And a bit of a feeling out there at the moment is it's not the accountants wielding the big stick so much, but some of them have given me the impression that, well, this is what you have to do, end of story. Mm-hmm. And I just think some people think, do you know what, I can't be bothered.
No.
I'm going to retire.
Yeah. But I like your thinking. I like, you know, there's a... there's an educational job that needs to be done here. And I think, you know, businesses often fall down in not understanding the numbers behind their business. They often fall down in terms of not understanding their target market and their marketing strategy. So it's all good stuff. Mm. Good. Thank you, Alan. Just tell us how people can get in touch with you. That's the key thing.
You can get in touch with us on our website if you go to www.bradleysaccountants.co.uk, or if you prefer to contact us by phone, our number is 020-8303-128.
You're on Welling High Street, and you've also got a Twitter account, which I know is at Bradley's ACCC.
Yes.
Brilliant. Alan, thanks so much for coming today.
Thanks, Alan.
Very informative. And yes, there's a few of us out there that have got some homework to do. Brian.
Well, possibly. But there's just a couple of things, actually, because we are running out of time.
We've
probably got a couple of minutes left. Mm-hmm. We didn't mention it earlier, but today, did you know, is our last show of the year?
It is.
So it's the 10th of December, now 24th of December, Christmas Eve, other things going on. I, for one, will be in the pub with half a Maidstone. But so we won't be here. So
Parliament will still be sitting, obviously.
Possibly, phoning Pizza a Go-Go for some kind of turkey pizza or something. So
when are we back then?
Well, we are back with the first show of the new year on the 7th of January.
Oh, that's going to be a shock, isn't
it? So we have the, we've got a 4-week break. We have the wonderful Sonia Whittam from Go Media as our guest on that day. And then 2 weeks after that, on the 21st of January, we'll be back on air again with Christina Bowden from Bowden PR.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So, okay. And you've got a little bit of news to tell us about a new networking group that's starting in Maidstone as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. We touched upon it very briefly last time out, but the infamous BBN, with Dartford being totally full up for the year, that is also the situation we're in for next year. We've now sold out for next year. We're launching BBN Maidstone. First meeting is 18th of January, and I'm absolutely gobsmacked, but that has actually sold out with a cap of 50 businesses, and there's very, very few places left at the rest of the... Some other meetings already sold out. So to BBN, it's going to be a big year for us next year, and for you and I as well, Martin, because you have a big birthday next year. And
I do.
I'm not going to tell everybody how old you are, but it rhymes with nifty. And I have a very big birthday, and as we've got an accountant, mine is nifty plus VAT. So work that out.
Okay,
and leave you that.
I think I probably can. Fantastic. So lots of exciting things happening early in the new year. So make sure that everybody out there, make sure you're well rested and that you have a superb festive break. And we very much look forward to welcoming you back to our first show on the 7th, Monday the 7th of January 2019.
Frightening. Another year.
And hopefully we'll be in a better place when it comes to all this uncertainty that's currently out there. But what we're going to do now, I think, is we're going to play you out with another Beatles tune. This one from John Lennon. So,
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Sky.